Venezuela,
Brasil,
Argentina,
Ecuador,
Bolivia,
Uruguay,
Paraguay,
Nicaragua, Salvador,
Cuba.
With 10 left-wing governments in power today, Latin America is leading the world in implementing progressive social change.
Demonized by the North American mainstream media, a revolution is taking place in Latin America as many governments reject U.S. imperialist domination and neoliberalism in favor of socialism, social democracy, and integration.
From the 1950s to the 1990s, the United States subjected Latin America to 18 military dictatorships and neoliberalism. The dictatorships killed about 1 million people, and neoliberalism impoverished many countries.
The Latin American Revolution is the people's answer to these U.S. imperial strategies. This remarkable process is the result of decades of struggle by political parties and social and guerrilla movements inspired by Latin America's liberator, Simón Bolívar, and its best-known revolutionary, Che Guevara.
La revolución...
Revolución.
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 Revolución latinoamericana.
You're listening to The Latin American Revolution, a four-part radio documentary. I'm Kristen Schwartz.
I'm Asad Ismi. Most of the interviews in this documentary were recorded at the 2009 World Social Forum held in Belém, Brazil.
This is Cuba, Nicaragua, and El Salvador, the third episode in our series. Cuba has inspired the Latin American Revolution, while Nicaragua recently celebrated 30 years of the Sandinista Revolution. In 2009, El Salvador elected the first left-wing government in its history. For the next half hour, we look at the revolutionary process in all three countries.
In January 2009, Cuba celebrated 50 years of revolution. The leaders of the Latin American Revolution, Venezuela and Bolivia, have been inspired by the Cuban Revolution, which has been defeating U.S. imperialism's attempts to destroy it since 1959. In that time, the government of Fidel Castro has created an extensive welfare state, providing the population with free education and medical care and subsidizing its basic needs for food and accommodation. This is in spite of a massive economic blockade imposed on Cuba by Washington that prevents even necessities from getting to the island. In spite of 15 assassination attempts by the U.S. on Castro's life, as well as a U.S.-backed invasion of Cuba and many terrorist attacks on the island carried out by Washington's agents.
The Cuban example has been crucial in showing Latin American states that they can successfully defy Washington and build an egalitarian society for their people. Dr. Aleida Guevara is the daughter of Latin America's most famous revolutionary, Che Guevara, who, along with Fidel Castro, led the Cuban Revolution.
And many have been the years of struggle that we have sustained during these very long 50 years without ever having to give an inch, without ever having to lower our heads at the empire that is the United States of North America. And now imagine a people united, a people determined to conquer what is rightfully theirs. Who can ever stop them? Who can ever hold them back? No one. And the most obvious example of this idea that I'm trying to convey is embodied by this 50-year-old Cuban revolution.
The Cuban Revolution has eliminated illiteracy, established free education from preschool to the PhD level, provided free health care to all, carried out wide-ranging land reform, restricted rent to 10% of income, developed an impressive biotechnology industry, and given Cuba the world's best environmental record, having increased its forest coverage by over 50%. According to the World Wildlife Fund, socialist Cuba is the only country in the world that is developing sustainably. Due to the investment in healthcare, infant mortality in Cuba is 4.7 deaths per 1,000 live births, the lowest in the Western Hemisphere. Infant mortality in the United States is 7 deaths per 1,000 live births.
The Cuban Revolution has not stopped at taking care of its own people. It has given its health expertise free of charge to other southern countries. In 2008, 36,500 Cuban doctors were sent to 81 countries of the global south to provide health care to poor people. This is a higher number of doctors than is provided by the United Nations. Cuba is also training 76,000 foreign students in medicine for free.
These are the accomplishments that have inspired the Latin American Revolution. In the contest between the United States and Cuba over whose example would be followed in Latin America, Cuba appears to have won. Professor Luis René Fernández Tabillo is Deputy Director of the Center for Hemispheric and U.S. Studies at the University of Havana. Dr. Fernandez is an expert on Cuban-U.S. relations. He gives two main reasons for why small Cuba has prevailed against the vastly more powerful U.S. empire.
The first is that the revolution never, until today, lacked contacts with its people. Probably the other most important reason is that the revolution was based in the continuation of the War of Independence. That means the root of the revolution came from the liberation of Cuba, of Spain, and of the United States, and was designed by Martí, José Martí, a Cuban national hero, which founded the party of the revolution at that time to fight the Second War of Independence. The revolution in 1959, the triumph of the revolution is the triumph of the same revolution. That means it's a continuation of the same history of fight for independence. And the majority of Cuban people value a lot to be independence.
The next revolution after Cuba's in Latin America was that of Nicaragua in 1979, led by the socialist Sandinista National Liberation Front, or FSLN. The Sandinistas overthrew a U.S.-imposed dictatorship and created a free electoral system. Today, the Sandinistas are back in power in Nicaragua, with their leader, Daniel Ortega, echoing President Hugo Chavez in saying that he wants an end to savage capitalism.
In 2009, Nicaragua celebrated 30 years of the Sandinista Revolution. The revolution ended 70 years of brutal U.S.-imposed dictatorship. In 1909, the U.S. Army invaded Nicaragua, occupying it for 24 years. General Smedley Butler, who led the U.S. forces in Nicaragua, said, quote, "I was a high-class muscle man for big business, for Wall Street and for the banks. In short, I was a racketeer, a gangster for capitalism. I helped purify Nicaragua for the international banking house of Brown Brothers. I helped in the raping of half a dozen Central American republics for the benefits of Wall Street," unquote.
Nicaragua's legendary guerrilla leader, Augusto Sandino, fought the U.S. occupation until Washington was forced to withdraw its forces in 1933. The U.S. left behind its puppet, the National Guard, to rule the country under the command of Anastasio Somoza Garcia. Sandino signed a truce with Somoza, but the dictator still had him assassinated. Somoza and his son ruled Nicaragua for the next 46 years through massive repression, murder, rape, torture, and massacres of peasants. The Somozas plundered the country, amassing a fortune of $900 million, while two-thirds of Nicaraguans lived in poverty.
In 1979, the Nicaraguan people rose up against Somoza and he was overthrown in a revolution led by the FSLN, which was named after Sandino. The FSLN was created as a socialist political party and guerrilla movement. The party adopted a flexible strategy of forming alliances with different sectors such as workers, the peasantry, students, youth, and the urban middle class, thereby maximizing public support. The FSLN was led by a 9-member directorate headed by Daniel Ortega.
50,000 Nicaraguans died in the struggle against Somoza. Once in power, the Sandinistas moved quickly to end the enormous poverty created by Somoza through land reform and by making medical care and education free for the people. The FSLN redistributed land to 1 million people out of a population of 3.5 million at the time.
In education, an internationally acclaimed literacy campaign carried out by the FSLN reduced illiteracy from 54% to 12% of the population. Doris Miranda is a Nicaraguan educator and former vice mayor of the city of Esteli in northern Nicaragua. She worked for the Sandinista government's Ministry of Education at the time of the literacy campaign. Miranda has worked at every level of the Nicaraguan education system. Sara Lorero spoke to her in Esteli.
En la parte de educación, una de las cosas más importantes que se da y que arranca a partir de
The National Campaign for Literacy, which began in 1979, has been a key development in our country. This was a large-scale campaign which relied on the participation of youth aged 12 years and older. A massive social mobilization took place at the national level. The first part of the campaign involved volunteers who committed to six-month stays in the countryside, where they will implement a reading and writing module geared towards rural populations and targeting all settlements, even those located in the most remote areas. The second part dealt with the creation of adult programs in schools for the rural sector. It also led to the opening of secondary institutions that will offer non-academic professional programs.
Faced with the threat of a good example, as with Cuba, the U.S. attempted to destroy the Sandinista revolution by unleashing a vicious war on Nicaragua. Starting in 1980, under President Ronald Reagan, Washington armed, trained, and financed former members of the Nicaraguan National Guard in neighboring Honduras, who became known as the Contras. Contra death squads raided Nicaragua, killing 40,000 civilians and blowing up schools and hospitals. In per capita terms, this was equivalent to killing 2.5 million people in the U.S. The CIA mined Nicaragua's harbors, for which the United Nations International Court of Justice condemned the U.S. government. The court ordered the U.S. to pay Nicaragua $12 billion in reparations. The United States is the only country in the world judged by the International Court to have been guilty of sponsoring international terrorism.
In spite of such virulent U.S. terrorism, the FSLN held two free and fair elections in 1984 and 1990, losing the last one to a right-wing coalition created by Washington. The Contra War was so destructive that the Nicaraguan people wanted to end it, even if it meant voting for a right-wing government. 16 years of neoliberal governments followed that made Nicaragua the second poorest country in the hemisphere. Many of the gains of the revolution were taken away, and healthcare and education became commodities again.
So when the Sandinista government fell, all programs they instituted fell with them. All mandates and curriculum used by the Ministry of Education were modified. All textbooks were burned. All policies that had been developed over a period of 10 years were eliminated. Just as it was for the health sector, these policies, spearheaded by the Sandinistas, had been intended to expand education services and support. So when the new government began to act as if this was not one of its main responsibilities, even though it is stipulated in the Constitution, we started to witness a privatization in the education sector. Prep schools and private secondary and post-secondary schools start to spring up everywhere. Public education began to suffer in terms of its quality and delivery since it was no longer a priority. The same can be said for the health sector. The government stopped investing in the creation of new public health centers. The rural sector was no longer a focus, and we began to witness the implementation of neoliberal policies which were completely opposite to the previous ones, which had aimed to meet the needs of those most vulnerable in our society.
Even under the neoliberal governments, the FSLN remained the second biggest political party in Nicaragua. In 2006, the Sandinistas won the national election, still led by Daniel Ortega, and immediately brought back free education and medical care. Thousands of children returned to school, and illiteracy was cut from 35% to less than 5%. A zero hunger program has reduced malnutrition from 52% of the population to 22%. The program distributes 1 million meals a day to educational centers. Land and low interest loans were given to small farmers to provide food security, benefiting 100,000 peasant families.
The FSLN also moved to make Nicaragua a member of ALBA, the Progressive Trade Alliance, led by Venezuela. ALBA stands for the Bolivarian Alliance for the Peoples of Our America. Under ALBA, Nicaragua is able to exchange beans, meat, and calves for Venezuelan oil. The Trade Alliance also finances many of the FSLN's social programs. In order to gain power, however, Daniel Ortega has made some compromises with the right-wing opposition that can only be condemned. These include setting free Arnoldo Alemán, the leader of the Constitutional Liberal Party, who was convicted of stealing $100 million in public funds and sentenced to 20 years in prison. Even more disgraceful is Ortega's deal with the Catholic Church, in return for whose support the FSLN has banned therapeutic abortions for women. This means that women cannot legally get abortions in Nicaragua even when their lives are in danger.
Yo creo que es un derecho. Las mujeres tienen derecho a decidir. Entonces yo siento que era algo que estaba
I believe women have the right to choose. Before, this belief was integrated within our Declaration of Rights. But now it has been pushed out and we have gone backwards. What we are addressing now is therapeutic abortions, administered by accredited doctors when the life of a woman or the fetus is at risk. I don't agree with this ban. It's unacceptable.
Daniel Ortega is not by himself the Sandinista revolution, and the legacy and power of this far outmatches his own. As Violeta Delgado, leader of the non-governmental organization Network Against Violence Against Women, explains, the lasting legacy of the Sandinista revolution has been the levels of organization that the people have created to bring about change, changes in their living conditions and the development of their communities, and to make a reality the Nicaragua which we all dream of. This legacy can be seen in the existence of over 200 women's organizations, an unprecedented number in the entire region. It's also seen in around 1,000 organizations, be they social, community, production-based, educational, health promotion, or research. Since the 1990s, these have continued making the revolution in their communities, in their trenches of resistance. They are part of the process of social change that has promoted social justice, democracy, inclusion, solidarity, transparency, equity, and respect for social, economic, and political rights.
Hermano, dame tu mano, y unidos marchemos ya hacia el sol de la victoria. Trayectoria de la libertad, hermano de la montaña, hermano de la ciudad. Juntos, unidos, lucharemos y unidos lograremos llegar al final. Ya nadie detiene la avalancha de un pueblo que tomó su decisión. Esta es la guerra desatada, la guerra prolongada contra el opresor. Esta es la guerra desatada, la guerra prolongada contra el opresor. ¿Cuál es la consigna? El pueblo no se detiene. ¿Cuál?
Joining the revolutionary wave sweeping Latin America are the people of El Salvador, who in March 2009 elected the first left-wing government in the country's history. Mauricio Funes, the candidate for the Farabundo Mati National Liberation Front, or FMLN, won the election and became president.
El Salvador, with a population of 6 million, is the smallest country in Central America. No other nation in Latin America has been more subject to U.S. domination, with Washington funding a series of brutal military dictatorships that first took power in 1932 with the massacre of 30,000 peasants. Salvadoran death squad leaders and thousands of other military officers were trained at the notorious U.S. Army School of the Americas in counterinsurgency techniques including murder, torture, extortion, blackmail, and kidnapping.
The FMLN arose as a revolutionary guerrilla army in 1979, and over 13 years fought the military dictatorship to a standstill. The U.S.-backed dictatorship's death squads and soldiers were overwhelmingly responsible for the killing of 79,000 Salvadorans. In 1992, the FMLN signed peace accords ending the guerrilla war. The terms of peace included the holding of elections and land reform. The FMLN reorganized itself as a socialist party.
2 decades of rule by the fascist Nationalist Republican Alliance, or ARENA, party followed. ARENA was founded by death squad leader Major Roberto d'Aubuisson, who was responsible for many murders, including that of Roman Catholic Archbishop Oscar Romero. ARENA won elections through extensive fraud and imposed neoliberalism, which destroyed the economy. Under ARENA, a small elite grew even richer, while the majority of Salvadorans were impoverished.
For this reason, the 2009 electoral victory of the FMLN was met by national jubilation. Mercedes Omania was a member of the board of the FMLN for San Salvador, El Salvador's capital, and worked with the party there for 5 years. She monitored the elections for the FMLN and voted in them. We spoke to her in Toronto.
They had lined themselves, you know, along the street with flags, and trucks were passing by, pickup trucks, minibuses, all people, you know, with those red flags and cheering and being so joyful and happy and saying, finally. I was celebrating. I cannot tell you, I have cried. I lost my voice there, you know. We defeated fear. We defeated the campaign of terror that came from the right-wing government. I think that the right-wing government in that party was astonished this time, because even though they had polluted the electoral registry, and I tell you, in El Salvador, dead people vote. And there's people who vote twice or three times, right? Even then, they lost.
A major reason for the FMLN's election victory was ARENA's destruction of the economy. Under ARENA's rule, U.S.-funded death squads were followed by 20 years of U.S.-enforced neoliberalism that created massive poverty, unemployment, official corruption, and criminality. These conditions forced more than 2 million Salvadorans, one-third of the population, to immigrate, mainly to North America. Most of El Salvador's income comes from remittances sent by these immigrants. Between 60 and 70% of Salvadorans live in poverty.
But yeah, no. Right now, remittances is what's sustaining El Salvador's economy. You know how you have somebody in the CPR connected to all these machines? That's El Salvador. Right. Living like a vegetable, you know, connected, plugged to machines. These machines being, you know, the one machine, the respirator, is the diaspora living, you know, in other countries sending money. That's the kind of economy we have right now. The state of the economy is so bad. About two, three years ago, El Salvador ran out of beans. The food of the poor is beans. We ran out of beans. It was ridiculous. It's the deterioration of the economy, the lack of investment taken to the extreme in El Salvador. We had a stupid elite. That's what we had, you know. At least there's some elites that are sometimes they think, you know what? Oh, let me give some scraps of food to the people, yeah, there. Let me give some. Maybe that they'll believe that I'm taking care of them. No, this was stupid elites, you know. So Salvadorian people have grown tired of these conditions. They have seen the economy deteriorated. They have seen the criminality rates going up. And on top of that, we have fraud, extreme fraud and corruption running in this government.
Another important reason for the FMLN victory was the Latin American Revolution, which provides an answer to El Salvador's economic problems. 10 left-wing governments had been elected in South and Central America before the Salvadoran poll, creating a conducive regional environment for the FMLN's triumph. Having successful revolutionary processes happening in other parts of Latin America makes Salvadorans feel that they can push for a revolutionary government also.
Yes, the revolution, the Latin American revolution, has supported the victory in El Salvador. Our point of reference is Venezuela, Brazil, is Ecuador, is Bolivia, Cuba as well. And to me, it's been very powerful always to look at the accomplishments of the Cuban Revolution in spite of the blockade. But looking at the environment, you know, across the continent, and looking, look at that government, that Hugo Chavez won. Look at that other government, Evo Morales won. Look at that other government, Correa won. And I think that indeed it is a movement. For the case of Funes, Mauricio Funes, for instance, it made such a change, right? When you look at points of reference for us, guess what? Mauricio Funes, when he started thinking of his, you know, and looking at his campaign, he went and visited Lula in Brazil and said, "This is a government I want to take example of, you know, of the policies, etc." You know, and the same for FMLN as well. They go and visit, you know, Hugo Chavez, establish alliances.
In cooperation with the Venezuelan government, FMLN-run municipalities in El Salvador have created the Intermunicipal Energy Association for El Salvador, or ENEPASA, which imports subsidized diesel and gasoline from Venezuela and sells it to the public. Due to the low price charged by ENEPASA, participating gas stations are unable to keep up with public demand.
And people start seeing, oh my God, there's an opportunity. How come the government didn't the right-wing government didn't think of this before? And they're saying, well, because they have this frame of mind that they shouldn't, you know, align with Hugo Chavez. And here you have, we're opening, you know, tearing down the walls. And so people saw the impact. My God, we are really wasting opportunities. How come we're being strangled? And if a minute of you're being strangled by the same elite.
The Latin American revolution, not the United States, provides the economic model for the FMLN.
I think that we need to look to the South and strengthen ourselves. So I am hoping that El Salvador develops or joins or becomes part of an initiative to strengthen the relationships in the region and relationships that, you know, are bound by agreements to further the interests of the region and the interests of the poor people in the region, the working class people of the region. That's what I want to see, not agreements or associations that further the interests of the elites. If ALBA is, for now, what we know, an effort that is happening in that direction, I will say go for it. We need it. We need it.
You have been listening to Cuba, Nicaragua, and El Salvador, the third episode of the documentary series, The Latin American Revolution.
The Latin American Revolution is dedicated to the memory of Che Guevara.
This documentary was written by Asad Ismi and produced by Kristen Schwartz. Go to www.asadismi.ws to download the series.
Translation in this episode by Susie Alvarez and Sarah Lurero. Interview with Doris Miranda, conducted by Sarah Lurero in Nicaragua.
Theme music is Seis por Derecho and El Gabán by Egberto Chiridos and Henry Rubio of Venezuela from the album Festival Llanero. In this episode, you also heard La Consina by Carlos Mejia Godoy.
Narration by Asad Ismi and Kristen Schwartz. Voiceover in this episode by Amandeep Panag and Susie Alvarez.
Special thanks to Susie Alvarez, Sarah Larrero, Alini Santos, and to Danae Parrott and Kevin Shaw at CHRY 105.5 FM for studio facilities.
This documentary was funded by Canadian Union of Postal Workers National,
CUPW Local 576 North Bay,
Canadian Union of Public Employees Local 3903,
Ontario Public Service Employees Union,
Ontario Secondary School Teachers Federation,
Ontario English Catholic Teachers Association,
Public Service Alliance of Canada,
and the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives. Thank you for listening.